and a warm welcome to Celebrating Success. Thank you for joining me. I'm Pauline Barclay, author of 9 published books. My passion is to write about events that happen in life and change everything for those involved, as well as those caught in the maelstrom. I want my characters to sit at your side, steal your attention, and sweep you up into their story. Stories that will bring tears to your eyes, have you laughing out loud, and sometimes what they share with you will stay in your heart for a very long time. My books are available in Kindle and paperback, and all available from Amazon. Today on Celebrating Success, the title Celebrating Success has never been more appropriate as today. My wonderful and amazing guest is Samuel Ridge Ward. Sam was the victim of horrific bullying. Throughout 2024, Sam is going to share his journey from being a young boy who thought life was almost over to a successful professional charity worker. Sam will be a regular guest here on my podcast and also on my blog. So please, please make a note to come back. Sam's story is disturbing, and though I know much of what happened, I still found talking to him today very moving. Please sit back and meet a truly remarkable young man. Good morning, Sam. How wonderful to meet you again. Listeners, I have got the wonderful Sam Ridge Ward with us today on the podcast. Sam is an amazing man. He has suffered horrific bullying when he was around the 13 age group. He's going to talk today a little bit about those early years and the devastating effect it had on him and his family. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Pauline. Thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And off the bat as well, I'd just like to thank you for your support of Red Bullion so far as well, and of myself with the blog post and everything else that we've been talking about. I think you're an absolute star. So thank you.
Thank you. But today it's about, when we say it's about you, Sam, it is about you because you went through a horrific time over years and you had to find a way to get out of that. And I don't know how you did it.
I mean, in part, I suppose neither do I. I think it was a really tough time, but we did do it. And I think that's the important part. And I'm hoping by way of talking about it, we can serve as a good example of how this is a situation that can be solved, or we can help people that go through similar things.
But you were a young boy when all this started. What do you, at age 12, 13?
Yeah, sort of 10, 12, 13. I think I would joined Red Bullion when I was 13. So it would have been.
So how many years of abuse did you have to cope with?
It would have been pretty much my whole high school experience, almost from day one. So it would have been, I have memories from sort of 10 onwards, really. I think before that it was fine, or no different than usual, I'd expect. But yeah, a long time. It felt like longer.
Yeah. So how did this all start? I know it's difficult for you to talk about, and I feel to some degree a little guilty asking the questions, but
no, it's okay. Thank you.
If we can understand how it started, and hopefully other people can see some of the issues that started your bullying, they might be able to pick those up in their own children now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. How it started. That's a really good question. I don't think it would have started unusually per se, or different to any given child might experience. I think bullying is kind of it's very widespread and sort of very omnipresent, and it can manifest itself in a lot of different forms, you know, from sort of gentle teasing up to physical assault and all the rest of it. And I think probably every child will experience some of it. I think as a child, I was quite quiet and reserved and quite reclusive. And I think that, not that this even remotely justifies it, but I think that's helpful for bullies if you don't talk to people about it, if you don't escape it, or if you react particularly badly to it. I think it kind of helps, it kind of creates a bit of a cycle where you'll have an instance of bullying, you'll react badly or in a way that might be gratifying to them or will have an effect. And that makes you an easier or a more entertaining target or whatever the reason is. And I think you just get a bit of a, if nothing's done about it, there's a feedback loop where it just progressively gets worse and worse and worse.
Did you try at any point to try and stop these picking on you? Because, I mean, initially, I suppose your parents, as my parents used to say, oh, don't let them pick on you.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't remember trying really to do much about it before it got very bad. I don't really know what my rationale was. I don't know whether it was, well, I mean, everyone gets teased. What's anyone going to do about that? I know that when it started to get bad, so after I'd been attacked, for instance, that can't really not be discovered. I mean, even if I didn't tell my mum, she would have found out if you've got, a bruise or a mark or something like that. I remember being very disillusioned that, or not really trusting that anyone could do anything about it. I think kids are smart, and you can discipline them, but they'll pick their moments when no one can see, or they'll. For instance, I remember one particular occasion. I don't remember what had happened, but teachers had become aware that something quite bad had happened, and I remember that a very big deal had been made of it. And there were two particular individuals that were identified, and then in the following week they would be going around the school trying to find out who told on them and dishing out their beatings or whatever, as appropriate. And that just, it seemed to make the situation a lot worse rather than better. And at the end of the day, if something's happened to you out of sight of anybody and you say, oh, this has happened to me, all you really have is your word. And I think there's only so much that people can really do with that. So
they're very sneaky. They made sure that whatever they did to you was out of anybody else's eyeshot and earshot, so they could your word against theirs.
Yeah, and they would, because, I mean, kids are smart. I think quite often a lot smarter than we'll give them credit for a lot of the time, but they're not going to do anything particularly egregious when it can be discovered. So yeah, sorry, I've lost my train of thought there. But
that's all right. No worries. One of the things listening to you here is there must have been a sense of shame, because these are doing these things to me and I don't know how to deal with it, but I don't want to tell the teachers because I know what the consequences are going to be. If I tell my mum, she'll probably go to the teachers and the whole thing will turn into a big, big issue.
I think it would be difficult not to feel ashamed. But I think the main concern, or some of the main concerns I have, I remember feeling very strongly that, like, my poor mum, like, she'd be pulling her hair out trying to solve the problem. And if I didn't believe that she could do anything, telling her would just make her worry more.
So you kept a lot of what happened to you more to yourself because, one, you didn't want to upset your mum, and two, you didn't want to tell the teachers because the teacher's reaction would only create the bullies to make it worse for you.
I think fundamentally, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I didn't believe that anything could be done about it. I didn't want to upset my mum. And I think also, when it's very frequent and very regular, I don't really think it entered my thoughts much at all to do anything about it. I think mostly I was preoccupied with trying to hide or avoid it or make it not happen in the first place by avoiding school or doing whatever it is I could do.
So you actually, it became so bad that you stopped going to school when you could get away with it.
If I could get away with it, for sure. Yeah. And yeah, I think it was just very much a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, if you're worried that you're going to get attacked on your way to school, and then you do,
get attacked on your way to school, and then you still have to go into school with this awful fear around you.
Yeah. I think everything that you worry about, when it then becomes real, all of the unhelpful tendencies that you might have developed as a coping mechanism, hiding or not telling people and not talking to people, all the rest of it. It reinforces them, I think, or at least that's how I feel like it did for me. I really don't remember having much thought about bullying other than how can I avoid people? I don't want to tell anyone. I don't really want to engage with the world at all, you know.
So survival was really the only instinct. It was first and foremost.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, so for sure. Yeah.
Going to school became difficult. So when you didn't go to school, what did you do?
I hid mostly.
Avoided everybody.
Yeah, I think, you know, the outside world becomes a very scary place, and you know, to a child, yeah, when other children become something that you're afraid of, you don't really have many options.
So by now, did you have any friends at all by now? Or did you feel you were just alone?
I think I did have some friends. I had people that were also bullied, and there was a little bit of sort of camaraderie in that. But I don't remember really speaking to many of them outside of school. I don't remember doing an awful lot with them, but I knew the people that it was, you know, that I felt more comfortable talking to. So that, yeah, it wasn't, yeah, it was nice. It was nice that they were there.
So you had these people which you saw when you went to school. So on the days you do go to school, Sam, were the teachers aware what was going on, or were they just, because you must have been at times in class not concentrating fully. So surely the teachers noticed that you weren't perhaps as keen on the lessons as perhaps the others because you were distracted.
I think they probably were. I think it would depend on the teacher. I think some of the poor teachers, the classes were so unruly that I think that it took everything they had just to keep some semblance of order, right, or to try and teach anything at all. So some of them, I think probably not, but I mean, it's completely understandable why not. Some of the classes I remember being really, really, really quite unruly. Some of them I think did. And I know later in life when I found Red Balloon and some of them would have opportunities to check in and see how I was doing and all the rest of it, I came to learn that some of them were very aware of it. But I don't think, if I were to put myself in their shoes, I'm not sure if I would have known what to have done about it. So some of them may well have been concerned, but it wouldn't have been obvious what there was to be done other than to just keep your classroom under control and keep everything that you can see in some kind of order. But I think the problem that the teachers would face is that the children will spend a lot more time in each other's company than in a teacher's company, and they'll find each other outside of school or in places where teachers can't see and things like that. So
it sounds horrific to us adults now to think that a young boy was in a class, unruly or otherwise, afraid for his own general survival, really, because there you were trying to learn because you had to go to school and you're surrounded by chaos. Mm-hmm. Teachers who probably had some idea what was going on but did nothing. And yet you're a young boy and nobody really stepped up and said, come on, let's get to the bottom of this. Is that about really some of it?
I'd say that's broadly right. There were one or two teachers that would try what they can, but I just don't think I know what they could have done.
But you, at that age, of course, you couldn't know what they could have done because you were a young boy.
I suppose so, yeah.
They were adults, educated adults, because they were in a teaching position, so they were educated people. I don't know what to say on that one. It just sounds horrific to me to think that a young boy is sat not just one day, but several days, no, over weeks, months, and years in that situation. So it's unimaginable, really, for us to understand that, Sam. But I do know, as you got to nearer 13, things did change to help you get out of that situation. Would you like to tell us just a little bit about it? I know you're going to come back later over the coming weeks and months to do more podcasts.
Yeah,
to
certainly,
cover
if you'd have me.
More detail. Oh, God, I'd love to have you. More detail. But just on this podcast, can we just jump a little bit ahead and look at how you found some help? Because that must have been like the end of the world for you at one point.
Yes, certainly. So, it's mostly due to the efforts of my mum, really. I think that despite my efforts trying not to tell her about things through my worries or whatnot, sometimes I would if it got too much and I would break down, or if she just intuited, if she found out things or if she discovered things. She worked really, really, really hard to do everything that she could. And I think somewhat at her wit's end, she took me to the GP. I wasn't in a very good state at all. I wouldn't really talk to people. I wouldn't really engage with the world at all. I don't think I would have looked like a very happy child in any respect. But she took me to the GP. And it just so happened that the GP was aware of Red Balloon. And she asked my mum, do you know about it? It's a specialist school for the recovery of bullied children. And it was really bizarre because it was like a perfect fit. It was a tailor-made thing. It was like, here is just the solution. It was unlikely that I was going to be able to get in because it's a small school, and unfortunately there's a big demand for it.
And that's worrying it. Sorry, I'm interrupting you, but that
good.
Sentence, a big demand for it, isn't that worrying? That is a big demand.
Yeah, it's not nice to think that there are more people that need places like Red Balloon than there are places like Red Balloon, for sure. But it, as it just so happened, I think it perhaps was just luck more than anything that my application was the one that was accepted. And then I started going to Red Balloon, and then through their efforts, by the time I left Red Balloon, I was ready to engage with the world. Perfectly normally
and
functioning
young adult. How long were you in Red Balloon? How many years were you there? I mean, we're not talking about a few weeks or months. We're talking years here, aren't we, Sam?
We are. Some children might only go for a small amount of time. But I think, thinking for myself and just about all of my peers, I think we were all there until we were ready to leave school at the usual age. So I was there from 13 to 16. So about 3 years.
And those years there helped to bring you back. Because I know I've met you, Sam, and you are an amazing young man. You're
an
absolute delight to know and a delight to talk to. Hearing, all the listeners hearing Sam talk about his childhood is heartbreaking. But believe you me, he is a wonderful person. And I'm talking to a great person. But those 3 years must have taken a lot of adjusting for you to come to terms with that. You go to school and you're going to be safe.
It was really unusual. I think I wrote about in the blog post that when I got there, it was in Mill Church at the time, and we knocked on the door and somebody kind of answered the door, and they were really pleasant to us and really nice. And I walked in and we were shown around, and just the idea that there were just really nice people that were all interacting with each other and learning and having a good time was just completely outside of what I'd come to expect a school to be like. It was just unreal. But yeah, through my years there, not only did they provide an education, so I got my GCSEs there, but they do a lot of work helping you to re-engage with the world. So be it counselling or just trying to teach you some basic life skills. So we would do things like, here's how you go out and cross the road, and here's how you go and buy things from the shop and have a go at doing it yourself. And they would get people in. Here's a police officer to tell you all about what the police do, and here's a fireman and all the rest of it. Like, get people, you know, things that as adults we would take for granted. But as children that haven't been, that have been kind of hiding from the world, those sorts of life skills that it would be, you know, I think had I been asked to get on a bus and take a route it would not have been something I was able to do as a child in high school. I would have just been terrified. I wouldn't have wanted to speak to anybody. I wouldn't be able to do it. But by degrees, they help you get to a place where you can engage with the world again. And now, as far as I'm aware, no issues at all. I can get on buses every day. It's fine.
Well, we know we've got you on podcast today.
Right, yeah, exactly. This sort of thing.
That's testament to what really happened at Red Balloon. And by the way, listeners, Red Balloon, the one Sam is talking about is Red Balloon in Norwich, Norfolk, United Kingdom.
That's right.
Sam, I have loved talking to you today. And I want you to come back because we've got lots more to talk about. I know it's very disturbing, but I know you think it's important to share, and I'd love you to share it if you don't mind. And today has been an introduction to our listeners. Sam will be back very shortly to do more podcasting, and he's also doing posts on my blog, and on my intro, I will explain all that to you. Sam, thank you for taking time out to come and talk to me.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful. You are coming back, aren't you?
Absolutely, definitely. I'd love to. Thank you.
Okay, Sam. Have a super day. Thanks a lot, and let's catch up again soon.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam, for joining me, for being so open and sharing what must be some of the worst years of your life. Listeners, I'm sure, like me, you have been affected by Sam's story. As I mentioned earlier, Sam will be a regular guest here on my podcast and also on my blog. And to go to my blog and read lots more about Sam, it's paulinemberkeley.blogspot.com. You can also find out all about Red Balloon Norwich Norfolk UK by visiting their website. Please do, as they do a fascinating job at rebuilding young lives that have been destroyed by bullying. Their website is, here we go, www.redballoonlearner.org/locations/red-balloon-norwich. I'll repeat that again, www.redballoonlearner.org/locations/red-balloon-norwich. In the coming days, I will set up a Just Giving page for Red Balloon Norwich Norfolk UK, and I will be adding the link to future podcasts and also to all posts on my blog and anywhere I can. As always, a huge thank you for joining me, and I can't wait to share your company again very soon. And of course, you can listen to all my podcasts at paulinebarkley.podbean.com or on Spotify. As with all my podcasts, you're more than welcome to share them with your family and friends. I really hope you will. And finally, don't forget you can find out more about me on my website, paulinebarkley.co.uk. Until we meet again, I hope the sun is shining on your face and in your heart. See you soon. Ta-ta for now.